Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 14, King Tritriketu's Lamentation, Text 21-54. Atmana Priyate Natma Parataha Swata Eva Va Lakshaye Alabda Kamam Twam Chintaya Shavalam Mukam Atmanak Priyate Natma Paratak Swata Evava Lakshaye Lava Kamam Twam Chintaya Shavalam Mukam Atmanaha of you, Priyate, is pleased. Na, not. Atma, the mind. Parataha, due to other causes. Swataha, due to yourself. Eva, indeed. Va, or. Lakshaye, I can see. Alabda kamam, not achieving your desired goals. Twam, you, chintaya, by anxiety. Shavalam, pale. Mukam, face. Translation, O King Tritriketu, I can observe that your mind is not pleased. You seem not to have achieved your desired goal. Is this because of you yourself, or has it been caused by others? Your pale face reflects your deep anxiety. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikshit, although the great sage Angira knew everything, he inquired from the king in this way. Thus King Chitraketu, desiring a son, bent low in great humility and spoke to the great sage as follows. Purport, since the face is the index of the mind, a saintly person can study the condition of one's mind by seeing his face. When Angira Rishi remarked about the king's discolored face, King Tritriketu explained the cause of his anxiety as follows. King Tritriketu said, O great Lord Angira, because of austerity, knowledge, and transcendental samadhi, you are free from all the reactions of sinful life. Therefore, as a perfect yogi, you can understand everything external and internal regarding embodied conditioned souls like us. O great soul, you are aware of everything, yet you are asking me, why am I full of anxiety? Therefore, in response to your order, let me disclose the cause. As a person aggrieved by hunger and thirst is not pleased by the external gratification of flower garlands or sandalwood pulp, I am not pleased with my empire, opulences, or possessions which are desirable even for great demigods because I have no son. Therefore, O great sage, please save me and my forefathers who are descending to the darkness of hell because I have no progeny. Kindly do something so that I may have a son to deliver us from the hellish conditions. Purport. According to Vedic civilization, one gets married simply to have a son, who is needed to offer oblations to his forefathers. King Tritriketu responsibly desired to beget a child so that he and his forefathers might be delivered from the darkest regions. He was concerned with how to get Pinda oblations in the next life, not only for himself, but also for his forefathers. Therefore, he requested Angira Rishi to favor him by doing something that could help him get a son. In response to the request of Maharaj Trichaketu, Angira Rishi, who was born of Lord Brahma's mind, was very merciful towards him. Because the sage was a greatly powerful personality, he performed a sacrifice by offering oblations of sweet rice to Tvastha. O Parikshit Maharaj, best of the Bharatas, the remnants of the food offered in the jugga were given by the great sage Angira to the first and most perfect among Trichaketu's millions of queens, whose name was Kriyaduti. Thereafter, the great sage told the king, O great king, now you will have a son who will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. The sage then left without waiting for Trichaketu's response. Purport. The word harsha means jubilation, and shoka means lamentation. The king was overwhelmed with joy when he understood that he would have a son. Because of his great jubilation, he could not actually understand the statement of the sage Angira. He accepted it to mean that there would certainly be jubilation because of the birth of his future son, but that he would be the king's only son, and being very proud of his great wealth and empire, would not be very obedient to his father. Thus the king was satisfied, thinking, let there be a son. It does not matter if he is not very obedient. In Bengal, there is a proverb that instead of having no maternal uncle, it is better to have a maternal uncle who is blind. The king accepted this philosophy, thinking that a disobedient son would be better than no son at all. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. Lord Jagannath Lord Baladev Srimati Subhadra Devi Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gaurani Tai Ki Jai. The great sage Chanaka Pandit says, Kurta putrena jatena yona vidvana dharmaka kanena chakshusha kimva chakshu pi daiva kevalam. What is the use of a son who is neither a learned scholar nor a devotee? Such a son is like a blind, diseased eye which always causes suffering. Nevertheless, the material world is so polluted that one wants to have a son even though he is useless. This attitude was represented in the history of King Trichaketu. As Kritikadeva, after receiving the semen of Lord Shiva from Agni, conceived a child named Skanda Kartikeya, Kritaduti, having received semen from Trichaketu, became pregnant after eating the remnants of food from the jugga performed by Angira. After receiving semen from Maharaj Trichaketu, the king of Surasena, Queen Kritaduti gradually developed in her pregnancy. O king, Parikshit, just as the moon develops during the bright fortnight. Thereafter, in the due course of time, a son was born to the king. Hearing news of this, all the inhabitants of the state of Surasena were extremely pleased. King Trichaketu was especially pleased. After purifying himself by bathing and decorating himself with ornaments, he engaged learned Brahmins in offering benedictions to the child and performing the birth ceremony. Unto the Brahmins who took part in the ritualistic ceremony, the king gave charity of gold, silver, garments, ornaments, villages, horses, and elephants, as well as 60 crores of cows, 600 million cows. As the cloud indiscriminately pours water on the earth, the beneficent King Trichaketu, to increase the reputation, opulence, and longevity of his son, distributed like rainfall all desirable things to everyone. When a poor man gets some money after great difficulty, his affection for the money increases daily. Similarly, when King Trichaketu, after great difficulty, received a son, his affection for the son increased day after day. The mother's attraction and attention to the son, like that of the child's father, excessively increased. The other wives, seeing Kritaduti's son, were very much agitated, as if by high fevers, with a desire to have sons. As King Trichaketu fostered his son very carefully, his affection for Queen Kritaduti increased, but gradually he lost affection for the other wives who had no sons. The otherwise were extremely unhappy due to their being sonless. Because of the king's negligence toward them, they condemned themselves in envy and lamented. A wife who has no sons is neglected at home by her husband and dishonored by her co-wives exactly like a maid servant. Certainly such a woman is condemned in every respect because of her sinful life. Purport. As stated by Chanaka Pandit, Mata yasya grihe nashti bharya cha priya vadini aranyam tena gantavyam itaranyam tata griham. A person who has no mother at home and whose wife does not speak sweetly should go to the forest. Such a person living at home and living in the forest are equal. Similarly, for a woman who has no son, who is not cared for by her husband, and whose co-wives neglect her, treating her like a maidservant, to go to the forest is better than to remain at home. Even maidservants who are constantly engaged in rendering service to the husband are honored by the husband, and thus they have nothing for which to lament. Our position, however, is that we are maidservants of the maidservant, therefore we are most unfortunate. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, being neglected by their husband and seeing Krita Duti's opulence in possessing a son, Krita Duti's co-wives always burned in envy, which became extremely strong. As their envy increased, they lost their intelligence. Being extremely hard-hearted, unable to tolerate the king's neglect, they finally administered poison to the son. Unaware of the poison administered by her co-wives, Queen Krita Duti walked within the house. Thinking that her son was sleeping deeply, she did not understand that he was dead. Thinking that her child had been sleeping for a long time, Queen Krita Duti, who is certainly very intelligent, ordered the nurse, "My dear friend, please bring my son here." When the maidservant approached the child who was lying down, she saw that his eyes would turn upward. There were no signs of life, and all his senses having stopped, she could understand that the child was dead. Seeing this, she immediately cried, "Now I am doomed," and fell to the ground. In great agitation, the maidservant struck her breast with both hands and cried loudly in regretful words. Hearing her loud voice, the queen immediately came, and when she approached her son, she saw that he was suddenly dead. In great lamentation, her hair and dress in disarray, the queen fell to the ground unconscious. O king, hearing the loud crying, all the inhabitants of the palace came, both men and women. Being equally aggrieved, they also began to cry. The queens who had administered the poison also cried pretentiously, knowing full well their offense. When King Chitraketu heard of his son's death from unknown causes, he became almost blind. Because of his great affection for his son, his lamentation grew like a blazing fire. And as soon as he went to see the dead child, he kept slipping and falling to the ground. Surrounded by his ministers and other officers and the learned Brahmins present, the king approached and fell unconscious at the child's feet, his hair and dress scattered. When the king, breathing heavily, regained consciousness, his eyes were tearful and he could not speak. When the queen saw her husband, King Chitraketu emerged in great lamentation and saw the dead child, who was the only son in the family. She lamented in various ways. This increased the pain and the cause of the hearts of all the inhabitants of the palace, the ministers and all the Brahmins. The garland of flowers decorating the queen's head fell and her hair scattered. Falling tears melted the collyrium on her eyes and moistened her breasts, which were covered with kumkum powder. As she lamented the loss of her son, her loud crying resembled the sweet sound of a kukuri bird. Text 54. Alas, O Providence, O Creator, you are certainly inexperienced in creation, for during the lifetime of a father you have caused the death of his son, thus acting in opposition to your creative laws. If you are determined to contradict these laws, you are certainly the enemy of living entities and are never merciful. Purport. This is the way a conditioned soul condemns the Supreme Creator when he meets reverses. Sometimes he accuses the Supreme Personality of Godhead of being crooked because people are happy and some are not. Here the queen blames Supreme Providence for her son's death. Following the creative laws, a father should die first and then his son. If the creative laws are changed according to the whims of Providence, then Providence certainly should not be considered merciful, but must be considered inimical to the created being. Actually, it is not the creator, but the conditioned soul who is inexperienced. He does not know how the subtle laws of fruitive activity work, and without knowledge of these laws of nature, he ignorantly criticizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Dhanamane Namaste Sarasutum Deve Gauravani Pacharne Nirvise Sarasunivari Paskatya De Sutarne. During the time of King Chitraketu, people were pious, undoubtedly, and therefore they did not have instances generally where the son would die before the father. Similarly, even in the age of Dwarpa Yuga, we find that one Brahmin whose son had died untimely went before the gates of King Ugrasena and began to criticize the king that he was certainly impious that in the presence of a father a son has died. That Prabhupada writes in the purport that in the age of Dwarpa Yuga that the kings are so responsible that they were responsible even for the rainfall. That if there was not proper rainfall or if there is the weather was not proper or if there is disease or famine or pestilence, the king would be directly blamed for such things. But of course, nowadays we can see that although they always blame the administrative head of the government for everything, but they never blame him for lack of rainfall or for other types of material miseries, adhyatmika miseries, because people do not know that actually it is the king who's responsible. But because in this age, not only the king is sinful, Prabhupada once indicated when he was asked about where organized crime is nowadays, and organized crime, he said, is the government. So the government is organized in such a way as to exploit the citizens to their maximum. Hardly we ever find that after taking a post of government leadership, that after leaving his post, the person is poorer than when he entered. Generally, they suddenly become very affluent after being in their post. They draw a salary of a few thousand guilders a month, and after the end of their term, they wind up to be millionaires. Inexplicably, by some good fortune. So the administrators are generally rogues and thieves, but of course the citizens are the ones who elect such rogues and thieves, therefore they get exactly what they deserve. But as it explains here, it is not the fault of Providence or the Supreme Personality of Godhead if someone does not obey the laws of the material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Narate kasyate papam na papam sukritam vibhum agyane navritam jnana tena muyanti jantava, that nor does the Supreme Spirit assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. The invited being, however, is bewildered because of his ignorance, which covers his real knowledge. And in the 18th chapter, it is explained that there are five causes for the accomplishment of any kind of activity. One of them is the material body. Another one is the material endeavor. Another is the soul. Another is the instruments for activity. And ultimately is the super soul. That there are five factors in the accomplishment of any work. So everything is going on here by a combination of these five activities. So how can we understand that is, what is the relationship between them? So that is in the Bhagavad Gita, this is explained throughout. That the material nature is the actual cause of all activities and effects. In the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it says that the material nature is said to be the cause of all activities and effects. That whatever we see acting or working in this material world is simply a combination of the modes of material nature. But above the material nature is the super soul. Therefore, Krishna says, Maya dakshena prakriti siyate sisdharacharam hetu nanena kondeya jagat viparivartate. That the material nature works under my direction. So therefore, we can understand that the super soul is directing the entire cosmic creation. Therefore, when the sudra is beating on the cow and the bull, they decline to accuse this particular shudra of being the cause, because they knew that he could not do anything independently. The bull did not respond because he knew that ultimately the real doer must have been Krishna. That without Krishna's sanction, nothing can go on. But we can't stop there, because otherwise then we'd claim that it is all Krishna's fault, that how is it that I'm such a nice person that something bad can happen to me? Therefore, we can't stop at simply considering that it is all Krishna's doing, this cosmic creation. There must be some other factor. So the other factor is that Krishna, he is neutral here. He is just like the judge. The judge, although he knows the laws, he is not particularly favorable towards one person or another. Everything depends upon one's activities. For instance, if a person is a murderer, he'll be condemned to death by the judge, but another person may be awarded a huge amount of wealth. That doesn't depend upon the judge, it depends upon one's particular activities. So what is the activity of the soul in the material world? So that's explained that the living entity, he has the capacity to desire. Although he can't be the direct doer in the material world, because he has some capacity to desire, therefore in that sense, he is the doer, but not the direct doer. Krishna senses that desire just like one can smell the flavor of flower by being near it. And when Krishna understands the desire of the soul, then he makes the arrangements through the material energy to fulfill that desire. Of course, there's not only desire, there's also desert or merit. For instance, I may desire right now, it'd be nice to fly around the room. You know, there's a nice chandelier here, I think I'll take a trip and sit on top of it. So, it might be nice to desire like that. I may desire very strongly and very sincerely. I may flap my hands up and down and try and do it. But it's very unlikely that I'll be given that facility immediately. Because in my next lifetime, if I really desire strongly, then it can all be arranged. You take birth, you have a nice mother with two little wings and a nice little tail. And then Krishna arranges it. But at the present moment, it is not within our capacity, within our desert. And how do we know it's not? Because everyone's desert can be seen in what type of body they have. If you have a fish's body, you have the power to spend your time underneath the water. Or if you have a bird's body, you can fly in the sky. So this is your desert. And according to that desert certainly limits what kind of desires will be fulfilled if you have them. Of course, as human beings, We have the capacity that if we desire something by our superior intelligence, it can be Krishna can give us the intelligence by which we can fulfill even a desire to fly or desire to go underneath the water. But it takes more than just our own body. We have to utilize the aid of some external source, like making machines and things. Or even if we really want to, we can develop mystic powers. But in any case, it's a combination of desire, and what we deserve is reflected by the particular body that we have. And then Krishna makes the arrangement through the material energy what we can do. So we can desire in so many different ways, and that desire is noted by the Supreme Lord. For instance, we are in a certain circumstance right now. If I want to, I have some options due to the circumstance. I can get up and leave the class. I can fall asleep in class. I can listen. Although I'm in this particular circumstance, there's a certain amount of options I have, even within the circumstance. And Krishna is noting what my activities are, my response to the different options that I have, and in the future He'll arrange another circumstance for me based upon how I desired and what I did under all different circumstances. They all combine together to present another circumstance to me. In other words, the reactions to my present circumstances will combine together and form another circumstance. Just like the pollen from different types of flowers, they combine together and they create a certain taste of honey. And in the future circumstances that I face on the basis of this circumstance or a combination of different circumstances, within that circumstance I'll have different options which I can choose, which will further create different circumstances for myself in the future. So nothing goes on by accident. It is all a combination of my desire and what I deserve. These react together to create different circumstances for the living entity. But in any case, the living entity has always the option, if he has the good fortune of coming in contact with a pure devotee, of giving up this desiring and deserving, or giving up or purifying his desire by engaging his desires in service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If he becomes an instrument for Krishna, if he does not independently desire on his own, of course he never independently desires. The living entity has no independent desire in any circumstance. He either becomes a servant of the senses and the mind. He checks out his body. All right, what do you want now, body? My dear mind, what do you desire? He becomes a faithful servant of his senses and mind, and thinks himself to be the doer of his activities, or he realizes that why should I fulfill the desires and the demands of my mind and senses? Instead, he tries to understand what is the desire and the demand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he dovetails his desires with that of the Supreme Lord. The living entity by nature is constitutionally a servant, therefore he must serve either the external material energy in the form of his body and senses, or if he wants, he can find out what is the demand of the Supreme Lord and serve that demand, and therefore voluntarily become a servant of Krishna. Either he voluntarily becomes a servant of the material energy, or he voluntarily becomes a servant of Krishna. The result is that by voluntarily becoming a servant of Krishna, he gets a spiritual body and goes to the spiritual world. And if he voluntarily becomes a servant of his mind and senses, he stays in the material world endlessly creating different circumstances for himself. Prakriti purusham chaiva. Prakriti purusham chaiva. Prakriti purusha prakriti bo. Purusha prakriti. Do I have Bhagavad Gita? Purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jangunan karna guna sangasya sat asat yoni janisu. Thus the living entities follow the different ways of life, enjoying the three modes of material nature. Now, this is due to their association with that material nature, and thus they meet with both good and evil amongst various species. So we're always associating with this material nature, and we're becoming influenced by that association. But we can end that association by association with Krishna through his devotees. Therefore it is said, Adal Shada Tata Sarusanga. So one has to have some faith, some preliminary knowledge that there is such a thing as spiritual life, that there is such a thing as higher consciousness, and then if one associates with the devotees, he can acquire their good qualities, their good devotional qualities, by the process of hearing and following their instructions. Of course, if we associate with the devotees and become victims to our minds, because our minds will tell us also, will preach to us, even the association of the devotees, to hear such and such, I don't like him or I don't like her, they don't look right, they don't smell right, I don't like the sound of their voice, they're not really devotees, etc. So the mind can preach to one, and one can develop all the bad qualities that he imagines. Or one can observe the good qualities of the devotees as they're engaged in devotional service, and in this way develop their good qualities. It simply rests with one, but the one who wants to see the good qualities of the bad ones. And one will develop automatically that good or bad quality simply by thinking, by the process of association through the mind. Therefore it's advised that one has to give up this envious attitude of thinking oneself to be the only good person in the world, the only person worthy of adoration, and think everyone else to be more or less an instrument for one's own glorification or service. And one has to see the good qualities in others, and in this way one will be able to develop good qualities within themselves. So here, of course, this is a very interesting story that King Chitraketu, he had 9,999,999 wives, and they all became envious. So just by some bad association, things don't go right, as we can see in the story. But even this boy, he was so much loved by his father, who was the king, and his mother, but still, due to his sinful activities in the past, and the king's sinful activities in the past, and all the queens, due to this arrangement of the material nature, due to their previous impious activities, therefore this lamentable, undesirable situation was created. As we'll find out, it was not by an accident that the little boy was poisoned. He was not a little innocent little child. He was actually an enemy of the king. But these things are not so obvious sometimes to understand them. But that is the subtle laws of material nature, how the material energy works. That nothing goes on by accident, although it may not always be very perceivable what the cause is, but we can understand that the cause is ultimately the sinful or the pious activities of living entities that cause, ultimately bring about all activities into effect. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Prabhupada, he used to become very Krishna was talking about misbelievers, right? That they're misbelieving Krishna. And on the other side, you know that we have all these misbelievers. So, a little confused about
that. Yes, but still it is up to the leader not to mislead. We may have, just like you may have a bad leader, but you also have the good association with someone who has some eyes, some vision. Now, Prabhupada personally came, and he was giving the instructions from the Bhagavad Gita. So, if the leader hears that instructions, he can agree to follow them. So, by good fortune or by the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord, he also has the opportunity to associate with a pure devotee and to take up to change his previous direction towards a positive spiritual direction to understand things properly. So somehow or another, either due to his previous good activities or due to the causeless mercy of the Lord, he has an opportunity, a choice, to change his direction in life. And similarly, although one may not be a great leader, if one hears this philosophy, he can at least change his direction. He can choose a different leader. So that there is some free will within the creation. And that free will ultimately becomes manifested when one gets the association of a devotee and hears the instructions coming from disciple succession. He can change his life, his activities, from material activities to spiritual activities. But that rests with living entities. Many people may hear of it, they may reject them also. They may choose to remain in the ignorant misconception of identifying themselves with their mind and senses and simply carrying on with the process of sense gratification. Therefore, Prabhupada wanted to create leaders in society, Brahmins, who had some vision. In the Vedic culture, Vedic society, it's not the king who is the ultimate leader, it was the Brahmins who were the ultimate leaders. Because they had some vision, they had the vision coming from the Shastra, they would direct the king. So Prabhupada wanted to create Brahmins who would actually have realized knowledge and would be exemplary in their activities, and they could guide society. Because who are the actual leaders within present society? The most influential people are the scientists and the educators, so-called scientists and educators, who are misleading people in general. Anything else? Well, they're the most enthusiastic to go to hell, to destroy everything. Therefore, they're the leaders. Svavidra hostrakara samstuta prusha pashu. That the little dogs, camels, hogs, and asses, they elect the big ones as their leader. So they're more powerful animals, and therefore they can do more destruction. But no one's independent of the laws of material nature. They've just been given that facility because of their accumulation of sinful activities in the past. They've been given a big chance to destroy themselves and everyone else. They're called discretinas because although they have some merit, it's being misused, and therefore it'll be misused in the biggest way. It'd be the most destructive. And Prahlad Maharaj uses the word vimudan. They're not only asses, but they're super asses. Anything else? Yes.
Well, exactly, it's not by Brahmins, it's from the Hermans Academy.
providence is under the workings of the time factor, which is a representative of Krishna. It's his energy by which material energy is changed, is moved. So under his direction, everything is coming into being. Krishna is the super soul, is observing everything, and he's arranging everything according to one's past activities and present desert and desire. So providence means the administration of the reactions that one suffers, or the arrangements made by the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his time factor. Yes.
Was it after this experience at Mars that
he became a great devotee? Yeah, this is enough to make him into a great devotee. A little bit later, but he was actually already a devotee, but he became more renounced after this experience. Yes, some people are a little stubborn, though. Yeah, obviously, someone who can give away 600 million cows in charity, he's on a different platform than we are. If we had one cow, we'd be hard-pressed to take care of it. What to speak of having 600 million cows. So these, or 10 million wives. Well, it's hard for us to conceive. Impossible. Therefore, we better off not trying to conceive of it, because probably we'll have a short circuit. But these are not ordinary persons. Obviously, they're quite extraordinary personalities. And they're functioning on a different level of consciousness than we can imagine. But nor should we think that King Trichaketu had 10 million wives, therefore he was very lusty. Therefore he was simply in the mood of enjoyment, but he was quite dutiful. Okay, thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.